Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst of friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Sammy of the Catcher's Corner. Sammy, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks for having me, Justin. Thanks, man. Listen, yo, when you first asked me to come on, I was like, why in the hell is this guy asking me to come on? And we were just talking about this, but I feel like I am like the Big Lebowski of the fantasy sports world, just trying to, you know, explain that I'm just a dude that does fantasy, you know? But yeah, man, excited to get it going. Appreciate you having me on, and let's talk some Yankees.
Yeah, man, like, let's be honest, like, don't be humble. You are the dude. You are not just a dude, and you're one of my favorite guys in the industry. Love your podcast that you do with Eric. And so when I was like, who do I want to bring on for the Yankees? Oh, I know who I want to bring on. I want to bring on Sammy. So where can people find you on social media and then plug your work?
So I'm on Twitter at @believe_Sammy. But I'm just a Twitter voyeur. I don't really, you know, engage much, but I just watch people act a fool on Twitter. You know, watching your stuff, Paul's stuff, a bunch of you guys. And yeah, man, listen, I told you a long time ago, I didn't understand or realize your gravitas in the fantasy world. So like once I got into this whole thing and realized, damn, Justin Mason is the GOAT. Like, you know, I couldn't pass up a chance to be on the pod, man.
Well, I appreciate that. I've been looking forward to this one for quite a while. You were one of the first people I kind of reached out to. I was all like, okay, I'm going to get Sammy on at some point.
Let's do it, baby.
The day has come. Let's talk some Yankees baseball. We'll start with the catching situation. Jose Trevino was kind of a nice little surprise last year.
Yeah.
Do you think he kind of repeat what he did? Is he worth drafting in fantasy?
Yeah. I've been looking at this with him and Higashioka. You know, I don't know what the playing time situation is going to look like. What I think is going to happen is they're really going to split time evenly. You know, Yankees have really kind of gone in a defensive mindset with their catchers. Both these guys are great behind the plate, but you know, Jose Trevino kind of waned in the second half of last year. So I don't know how viable he is as a number one catcher for in fantasy leagues. You know, I would assume that both these guys might have, you know, in two catcher leagues might be viable as a number two catcher since they'll be splitting time evenly. Right. So, you know, maybe about 350 at bats, 300 at bats each, you know, not much power potential in two of them. Probably, you know, you're probably looking at less than 10 home runs apiece. Higashioka probably has more of a power profile than Trevino does, where Trevino kind of gives you a little bit more of that contact ability. But neither, I think, is, you know, a starting catcher for you. I mean, you're definitely a two catcher league. It's guys you're probably going to look to pick up on the back end.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, Higashioka, I can't even say his name. Like, I think he's like a catcher three, maybe even a catcher four.
In
draft champions. Trevino is somewhat interesting as like kind of a low end catcher too, because he's a guy who doesn't really hurt you. He doesn't help you really anywhere, but like he's not gonna crush your batting average like some other
guys. To me, the biggest thing is that, you know, how many catcher twos you're gonna find that might garner 300 plus plate appearances, right? Like, You know, getting to the plate is name of the game in terms of production. So, I mean, if there isn't a clear cut number one there in New York, there's, you know, two guys that they're probably going to rotate in and out because they're confident in both of these guys' defensive ability behind the plate. So, you know, if you're looking for a number two catcher, I think, you know, Trevino more so than Higashioka is viable, but, you know, both of them might garner 300 plate appearances. So you can't go wrong there for two catcher leagues.
Let's move on into the infield and talk about Anthony Rizzo, who's coming off of a big bounce back year in New York. It feels like that stadium was just kind of built for him. And so I really love the fact that they re-signed him and brought him back. You drafting Anthony Rizzo this year?
You know, I was really, you know, when they re-signed him last year, I kind of was, you know, shying away from it. I was like, you know, age, you know, and, you know, I just thought he had nothing left, but he kind of sold out a little bit for power last year. So, you know, that, like you said, that ballpark is tailored for that left-handed swing. His contact and plate discipline is still intact. I think we might even see, you know, a BA bump, you know, back to the norm. And that power, I think, would still play in that stadium. I think he's viable, definitely as a starting first baseman in a majority of fantasy leagues, obviously. I think his ADP is somewhere in the 140s right now, if I'm not mistaken. So I think he's definitely in that, you know, Josh Bell, Ryan Mountcastle, you know, area where you can kind of, hey, fall back if you aren't grabbing one of the top first basemen. Certainly someone you can plug into your lineup and get some pretty decent production.
Yeah, I mean, I really like Rizzo as kind of like a fallback option if, you know, you end up missing on some of the elite options and kind of some of the middle tier options don't really make a lot of sense to you. Like, you can get Rizzo way later than you probably should.
I was really surprised that his ADP was that far back, you know, in the 140s and higher. I was like, you know, you can really kind of, hey, say, you know, let me pull back on first baseman here if there isn't somebody that I like and drop back on him. I mean, he's going to be plugged into a pretty decent lineup, probably behind Judge, you know, in front of God knows who at this point in Stanton if he's able to keep his legs working. But, you know, the ballpark plays, you know, his skill set plays there. So it's certainly, you know, someone that you can look to draft a little later than usual.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on over to second base, Gleyber Torres. Is he going to be slept on a little bit at second base, I feel like, in the market?
You know, dude, the Yankees infield is an absolute disaster at this point. Outside of first base, you literally have no idea who is going to be where, like, literally. And, you know, everybody was down on Gleyber, right? But, you know, if you go under the hood, which I had to do because, you know, how can I not come to this podcast prepared, right? Looking at, you know, Gleyber's year when compared to his career year in 2019, when he hit like 19 or whatever it was of his home runs against Baltimore, his power metrics were better in 2022 than they were in 2019, which was really surprising. Like, I was like, what am I looking at here? You know, he had, you know, a 441 X slug, highest of his career, hard hit rate at 45.3, barrel rate at 10.7%. You know, those were all career highs, better than 2019. So, I mean, his ADP is like, I don't even know. I think it's like in the 200s at this point. 114, sorry. So yeah, I mean, you know, it just, to me, it all depends on how much playing time he's going to get. That infield is clogged right now. Like, I don't know. It's something that you're going to have to monitor, you know, in spring training, getting a sense of what, you know, it's really important to listen to what the managers say. I know sometimes they just speak, but following what the team is saying, really kind of gives you a little bit of insight, and as well as the beat reporters, they're important too. You know, understanding what the roles are going to be for these guys, because I think ultimately that's going to determine what your return on investment is with Gleyber. But the skill set is there. I mean, he had a little bit of a drop. I think he had a wrist inflammation injury, you know, issue late in June that you kind of saw him kind of take a downturn on. But I think he had like a 900 plus OPS after September 1st. So, I mean, you know, there's a power profile there. And again, that ballpark plays, it's all a matter about how much time he's going to get on the field.
Yeah, it is kind of a weird situation, right? And we entered last year with this kind of weird situation for the Yankees too. It worked out for him. He got 572 plate appearances. I don't think there's any reason to think he won't play plenty. I think there are massive questions on what the hell they're doing at shortstop and what are they doing with like DJ LeMahieu? Like now, DJ LeMahieu is a guy who's like projected to be a bench bet, but he's going to get 500 plus, right?
I mean, if he can stay healthy, I mean, he's coming off that toe injury. You know, from what I heard today from Boone is that he's rehabbing fine, but there's literally no spots. I mean, you don't know where they're going to slot DJ. I mean, what I can see is, I mean, we're going to talk about this guy next because I'm really, you know, interested in, you know, one of the younger guys that they have possibly playing short. But let's say a young guy does take short. They do have Volpe in the minors. You know, they're grooming him to be the next shortstop of the future. The one place that I think he can stick, if Gleyber sticks at second, you know, maybe Josh Donaldson becomes a bench bat and LeMahieu plays third base. I mean, that he's done that before in the past, given his recent injuries and, you know, age. I mean, he may be a third baseman, but the power profile's depleted. I mean, like, if you're expecting him to to give you some kind of power bump. He's not going to do that. He's going to help you in BA. He's going to help you in OBP leagues. Those are the places where you can probably get, you know, a late flyer on him. I think his ADP right now is somewhere around 230. You know, depending on, again, the infield is a mess for the Yankees. We don't know, you know, they have a couple guys that are, you know, kind of declining and guys that can't stay healthy. You got to see how they're going to, you know, utilize these dudes, if they're going to rotate them in and out, and what the plan is.
Talk about Oswald Peraza, because right now he's projected to be the opening day shortstop. He is kind of an interesting prospect.
Yep.
Is he a guy you're drafting?
That's the guy that I was alluding to when we were talking about shortstop, you know, really held his own, you know, had a, you know, walk rate of 10.5 and a K rate of 15.8%. They really, you know, his AAA season, you saw a bump in his power profile. And he does something that he does something that they don't have, you know, a guy that can play defense and hit, you know, possibly. So, he's definitely somebody that I'm looking at, late round flyer, you know, somebody maybe in the, you know, late rounds, you know, he's got an ADP of what, like 340. So, I mean, like, you can get him really late. But again, all of these infielders right now are subject to what the playing time is. But depending on what he looks like in spring training, if he continues to show that he can, you know, maintain his plate discipline and put bat to ball, I mean, there's no reason why they wouldn't stick with Oswald Peraza and kind of go with that youth movement. I can really see a situation in which Volpe and Peraza are in the infield next year if, you know, things change.
Yeah, I mean, Peraza, like, he was actually really, really impressive in that small
sample. Yeah.
Now, it was a really small sample, so it's hard to know exactly, like,
for sure,
how many of these things kind of stick. But 91% zone contact, only swung outside of the zone a quarter of the time. Plays, like you said, pretty good defense. I think there's a really good chance he is the opening day shortstop and can hold on to that job most of the year. I do think Volpe is up at some point, but who knows when. Like, is he, you know, is he a guy that they want to push? Is he, or does Peraza, like, hold back Volpe from even, like, getting onto the team?
And we have no idea. Like, you know, we're still in the off season. We could see some kind of movement, you know, because once we start talking about the outfield, you know, there is a hole there. You know, we could see a move with Gleyber, you know, at some point mid season. That could possibly happen to shore up maybe another part and move Peraza over to second and, you know, put Volpe at short. I mean, that could be, or vice versa. You know, that is a possibility for the Yankees in the middle of the season. But yeah, I think it's Peraza's job to lose. He's probably the most athletic of the guys that they have. I know they have, IKF, kind of Falefa, who I think kind of gives you, you know, definitely a speed threat for them. You know, play solid defense, and, you know, he doesn't get hurt. So, you know, he's somebody that, you know, you would look to, you know, to kind of, for a categorical need. Maybe you wouldn't draft him, but a waiver wire pickup at some point in the season. But yeah, no, I agree with you, man. Peraza is really intriguing. The fact that he was able to come up and kind of hold his own, really, for me, whenever a young guy comes up, it's really, to me, I want to know what he looks like at the plate in terms of his plate discipline. And he kind of showed the ability to kind of handle himself against major league pitching. So definitely, I think it's his job to lose for sure.
Any chance you're drafting Josh Donaldson in any league? Like, the defense is still good. He's, you know, 500 plus plate appearances in each of the last two seasons, so the health has been okay. But the bat seemed just remarkably slower last year.
Yeah, no, I think I'm going to pass. I mean, you know, I really, you know, my concern is when guys get towards the back end of their career and then they just start chasing more. Just seems like he was out of sorts. You know, I don't know if, I mean, I got to be really in, you know, I think the only thing that you can bank on is that he's going to start the season at third base. I mean, Brian Cashman has to validate himself for making that trade and taking on that money. So he's going to open up the season as their third baseman, barring injury. And, you know, he may be a waiver wire pickup for you in the beginning, or late round draft pick for you if you're that much of a buy. But he's definitely, for anybody on a fantasy roster, if he's your starting third baseman, you got problems.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the zone contact was down like almost 5 percentage points. The average exit velocity was down four miles per hour. The max exit velocity was down 3 miles per hour. Like, that's not what you want to see out of a guy who's now 37 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the only reason he's even still like starting or even playing on his team is because Brian Cashman doesn't want to admit he made a huge mistake.
No, dude. I mean, like, everything was down for him. I mean, like, yeah. Everything. How do you go to Yankee Stadium and like your power skills just deplete? We had 43.3 hard hit rate. You know, the previous three seasons, he was up over 50%. That's a like huge drop for someone. And conversely, the strikeout rate went up to 27. I mean, so you're hitting for less power, you're striking out more, you're walking less. The first time last year, he had a walk rate under 10%. There's just not much there for me to believe that, you know, he's going to suddenly just turn it back around and, find that stroke. Especially in Yankee Stadium, it's really disappointing to see the kind of year he put together in that ballpark.
Oswaldo Cabrera, is he a guy that you think plays mostly in the outfield, or is he going to kind of do what he did last season, which is play a little bit of everywhere?
So, yeah, I think the plan is to rotate him in the outfield. You know, I mean, that's where my, you know, because they've got such a glutton of infielders, you know, I don't see them having to rotate him in there unless there's an injury somewhere. But left field is really a question mark at this point. I mean, you really only have Aaron Hicks and you have Cabrera, right? And like, I don't even should we even mention Aaron Hicks, dude? Like, seriously, like,
I saw an interview where he said he's going to go 30-30 this year.
Right. Well, that was like 10 years ago, maybe, Aaron. Like, listen, let's how about we work with step one and just stay on the field? Like, how about that? Yeah. So, I mean, left field's a hole. I mean, I think he gives you an athleticism there and, a really interesting, you know, power speed combo could probably net you, you know, if he got a full season of at bats, you know, maybe somewhere between 10 to 15 home runs, maybe 15 stolen bases, somewhere in that area. I think he can give them that there. I'm interested. Obviously the price is always the issue, right? You're not really going to be paying much. But again, it's how they're planning to use these guys. Are they going to give Hicks the benefit of the doubt and say, hey, you know what? We signed this guy to a 10-year contract or whatever it was that they gave him, and we're going to run him back out there, which I thought was the most ludicrous thing on the face of the planet, that they gave Aaron Hicks a long-term deal for no reason at all. I think Cabrera interests me if they're saying, you know what, we're thinking about this guy as manning left field for a majority of the season.
Is there like – outside of like draft champions, is there any format you would draft Aaron Hicks?
Oh, dude.
Like, I just drafted
him. Just the thought makes me queasy.
Like, yeah, I just drafted him in a draft champions league, and I felt bad about it. Right? I needed like someone who's going to play in the outfield, and I think he's going to play when he's healthy.
That's the only reason why you're drafting him at all, because he's going to play. If he's healthy, like, you know, so, I mean, maybe I got to be in dire straits. I really have to have ignored my outfield, you know, precipitously to like say, you know what, I'm going to take a flyer. And he did have 10 stolen bases last year in about 130 games. So, I mean, who knows, maybe there's, but that, you know, banking on him, you know, netting you double digit stolen bases is a foolhardy kind of exploration in my opinion.
Let's talk about the man, the myth, the legend, Aaron Judge, coming off of just an absolute monster of a season. Where are you taking him in drafts? Is he like the first overall pick for you? Is he a top five pick? Or are you kind of avoiding him because there's nowhere for him to go but down?
I mean, it's to me, he's still a top five pick. You know, I don't know if he's the first overall pick, but because there's going to be some regression there. He's not going to duplicate 60-plus home runs. I mean, he did chip in 16 stolen bases. I don't know if people remember that or people know, like, realize that. You know, so getting, you know, 133 runs scored, 130-plus RBIs, I mean, monster numbers across the board, right? Like, there's nothing really to say. He's a top five pick, even with the regression baked in. I mean, what do you, even with aggression, you're looking at maybe 45 plus home runs, you know, 100 plus in each runs and RBIs, and, you know, possibly 10, he can repeat 10 plus stolen bases. So, I mean, definitely a first round pick, you know, and he's good across the board, you know, batting average leagues, OBP leagues, you know, I'm in an OPS home league. My home league's in OPS leagues, plays in OPS league. He plays in literally every format that you can think about. So, to me, he's a top five pick, you know, set it and forget it with Aaron Judge.
I mean, I thought I was being fairly conservative with my projections on him, and it came out to being like the fifth best player in fantasy. Right. Yeah. I think the only question is like, how concerned are we that he's going to stay, you know, on the field? I mean, he's now had two straight seasons of 600 plate appearances, you know, more than 600 plate appearances, had a career high 696 last year.
Yeah.
I feel like every time I go to draft him and I haven't pulled the trigger this year, I'm holding my breath. Like, and I don't want to feel that way. So I don't know how many times I'm going to draft him this year, but like, I'm not badgering anybody that wants to take him first overall, because after the addition of the speed last year, the 16 stolen bases, you know, hitting 311 last year, you know, and 130 for runs and RBIs is insane. And even like you said, with the regression, I think he's still a top five guy.
Yeah, for sure. And I agree with you, man. Like, because honestly, watching him play, you know, he's like 6'7". Dude plays, I'm going to be honest, dude plays reckless. Like, he dives for balls, like throws himself up against walls. And I'm like, my man, those bumps are going to hurt a little bit more when you're getting closer, when you're over 30 or when you're at 30. So I get it, man, because, you know, at the beginning of his career, that was a real bugaboo for him, was being able to stay on the field. That there was always that, you know, everybody taking a deep breath whenever he took a cut at the plate or when he dove in the outfield. He's put a couple seasons of pretty, you know, consistent health, you know, put that stuff behind him. So, you know, but I mean, that risk is always in play for every guy you draft, right? Like, there's nobody that's immune from the injury bug. So, I mean, you kind of take them and you hold your breath.
Yeah. All right. Giancarlo Stanton is a guy who's not gotten past the injury bug. He's a guy who could hit 60 if everything came together in a season. He's fairly affordable. I actually took him in my current draft that I'm starting to finish up here because I needed some power.
Yeah.
And I know he can give it to me. Question is, how many games can I get from him?
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know what you're getting, right? Like, and that's partly why you got the discount in price, is because he's not going to play a full season. And I think that's kind of created the situation in left field. Like, they can't use Giancarlo in left field at all. Like, they cannot do that. So he's going to be baked in it. But even at DH, he got hurt last year with some hamstring, with his Achilles, you know, last year. So, I mean, even at DH, he's still getting hurt. I mean, you're hoping that when he gets on one of his ridiculous streaks, that there's enough of those streaks that he can return your investment. But yeah, I mean, ADP in the 140 range, I mean, that'll pull you what, in like the 10th to 12th round somewhere. I mean, if you're looking for power, I mean, there's nobody better, but you know what you're getting. Just remember that. You know what you're getting.
Yeah. You have to be able to backfill him.
Yeah. Make sure you have somebody behind him just in case.
Yeah. And that's the scary part, because he only had 450 plate appearances last year, hit 30 home runs. Like, he could like legitimately like put together one of these, you know, 50 homer seasons again. And I wouldn't be surprised at all, but I'm like a pencil in 400 something play appearances and 30 home runs. And I pray for just a magical season, you know, where he stays healthy and gets 600 plate appearances. So,
I mean, if he can get to 600, you're looking at an easy 40 home runs.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. Cause he does things in that ballpark with that short port and right, even as a right-handed hitter, he really can take it the other way as well as anybody. And he can put it over the wall as easy as anybody. So, I mean, that's the name of the game with him. If he can stay on the field, if he can get you 600 plate appearances, which is a long shot bet, but you know, if you happen to get him, you know, that late, you know, you could strike.
I hate to keep bringing up injuries with your outfielders, but, you know, Harrison Bader's a really, really intriguing guy. If he can stay on the field, he only played 86 games last year, 313 plate appearances, you know, 5 home runs, 17 stolen bases. He could be really, really interesting in that park if he stays on the field. How much faith do you have in Harrison Bader?
I actually like Harrison Bader a lot. I think, you know, there's been considerable contact gains with him. Had the highest contact zone contact rate at 88.1% last year. It's the highest of his career. He's got a strikeout rate down under 20 for the first time in his career. He's going to play full time. Like, he is going to man center field for the Yankees. And what I'm really interested in seeing is where he slots in the lineup. Because if he can lead off or be at the top in front of Judge, you know, I think there's considerable returns there for someone if they're going to take a shot. Not so much if he's a little bit further down in the lineup, but still, you're definitely looking at somebody that can potentially, given, you know, if he can continue the gains that he's made with his contact in that for a full season in that ballpark. Now, I know in St. Louis, that ballpark is a hitter's park too. But Yankee Stadium is another animal, in my opinion. And if he can stay on the field, I think you can see a 2020 guy. I think you might be able to get a 2020 guy. The contact rate, the power, you saw what he did in the playoffs. I think there's something there with him, and I think there's been considerable gains with him. I think if he can continue that, you know, at an ADP of 160, you're looking at minimum, what are you looking at, a 15-15 guy? You know, we're close to maybe 70, 80 runs scored. I mean,
not if he can't stay on the field, man. Like, he's never been able, he's never gotten 500 plate appearances in a season.
I mean, never. What are you paying though? You're paying 160 for at least, like, you know, last year he had 292 at bats, right? He still got you 17 stolen bases.
Yeah, he'll definitely get you the stolen bases. I do question the power. I know it is a much better park. I know, like, St. Louis played a little more hitter friendly last year, but St. Louis is a pitcher's park, and so this is a huge upgrade for him going to Yankee Stadium. Right. He should be healthy entering the season, but, like, I think you're probably looking like max 10 home runs. But I think there's, like, the upside of, like legitimately, like, he could steal 30 bases. I think.
I mean, he had 16 home runs in 2021 with 367 plate appearances, 12 home runs in 2019 with 347. 12 home runs with 379 in 2018. Give me a full season of Harrison Bader in Yankee Stadium, and I think he can give you at least 15 home runs plus.
Oh.
Come on, man. Stay with me, Justin.
I just don't buy it. I mean, like, I don't buy that he can even get to 400 or get to 500 plate appearances. Like, that's the biggest issue for me.
But if he could, though. If he could, though, you would say that in that park with a full season of at-bats, he could probably get to 15 home runs.
Yeah. If he gets 600 plate appearances, I think he can get 15 home runs. I think he can steal 20 bases. I just, like, there's no world in which I'm projecting him to 600 plate appearances. Like, I'm going to, like, I don't have my projections up in front of me right now, but I am sure I didn't even project him for 500 because he's never been there. Like, I mean, he's never been there. So, like, how can I project? And he's coming off a season in which he was marred by injury. Like, I don't know how anybody can reasonably project him a full season worth of plate appearances.
So Steamer has him at 464 at bats, 15 home runs, 17 stolen bases.
Yeah,
The bat has him at 505 with 16 homers and 20 stolen bases.
Well, and I want to say this. Okay, so when you're looking at Fangraphs, and I think this is, you know, something I didn't realize until earlier this year, and I started doing my projections, started talking to some people like Derek Hardy in the industry. What you see on Fangraphs is all kind of based off each other in terms of, like, the playing time. You know, before ATC comes out, the bats projections for playing time is based off of Steamer. All Fangraphs depth charts is Steamer's projection with Jason Martinez's playing time from Roster Resource. You know, the ATC is a conglomerate of all these projection systems. So,
it's just one big orgy. of
it is. It is like for when it comes to playing time, right? Like, so like be very, very careful. You go, look, all these projection systems say he's going to, you know, play a full season. No, no, they're that's like all incestuous, like playing time projections. Like I don't believe that shit at all. When it comes to that. And they're all crazy because like, they're all, you know, 500 ATC is the lowest at 510.
Right.
And all the way up to 560 from Fangraphs depth charts. Dude has never played 500 plate appearances. He's most amount of plate appearances he's had in a single season at the majors is 427. Last year was 313. Like, how do you project someone to figure out health at this point in his career? I'll project him. I think I projected him for four something, which just means I'm never going to get him because there are a lot of people in the industry who feel the same way as you. Like, hey, this guy is ready for a breakout. And I think skills-wise, he could do it. I just don't know how you.
You're just more concerned about the playing time.
I just don't
be able to do it. But you do. Let's say hypothetically, if somebody said to you right now, Harrison Bader is going to get 450 plus plate appearances.
You're playing MLB The Show. You turn off injuries. Yeah, like I think he could go 15-20 for sure. Like, right. If you could like pencil in 600 plate appearances, like I mean, I would.
What are the other options? What are the other options at his ADP? I think like if we were looking at other options. I mean, let me see here. Give me one sec. Let's see. In the 160 range, kind of looking at the Brandon Nimmo's.
Yeah, I don't trust his plate appearances either. I mean, I know last year Nimmo got
the Andrew Benintendi's, you know, maybe Hunter Renfro, you take over him for sure. But I mean, If you're sizing him up with the other options, I mean, it's a pretty.
I hate to say it. Give me Cody Ballinger. Like,
I mean, that's like, fair.
Yeah, there's power, there's speed. That's He's going to play fair. Every day. Give me Lars Nootbaar. I'm a big Nootbaar fan. Like,
him too. Yeah, for sure.
The ceiling is definitely lower on a guy like Alex Verdugo, but all that dude does is play and accumulate. You know,
like, I guess it's what your risk tolerance is.
Yeah.
Right.
I think in a shallow league, go for it. In a 10 team league, you know, take the gamble. Even a 12 team league, take the gamble. Because there will be some replacement on the waiver wire. But if you play in deeper leagues, man, I wouldn't touch it. Like, I'm not going to play
around. Fair enough. I mean, like I said, the Yankees are riddled with guys that have this same question. Mm-hmm. How often are they going to be on the field? Which is concerning because this is, you know, you know, the offense was a big downfall in the playoffs, and you know it's coming around. I think that it could possibly hurt them. I think they're really focused on youth movement and hoping that some of these young guys could step in and you know share some of the load.
Let's move on over to the pitching staff. Let's start with Gerrit Cole. Is he or should he be the number one pitcher off the board? Considering like last year was a down season, quote unquote, but he was still amazing. And if you really like your tinfoil hats, there's been a lot of people like saying, hey, if Judge was getting juice balls, maybe that explains why Gerrit Cole's homer rate was up last year. I kind of buy it, honestly. Do you really? Yeah, like they're not switching out balls in between innings.
Yeah,
the pitchers in those games, if Judge was getting juice balls, the pitchers were too. I can't imagine they play that same game again and risk getting caught doing it twice. So, like, either everybody's going to have juice balls or nobody's going to have juice balls. And Gerrit Cole, you know, gets to come back to the pack in terms of his home run rate. Like, I think Gerrit Cole's probably should be the number one pitcher off the board.
So, let me just – so, last year, me and Eric are in the same home league, right? And Eric had the first pick. I had the second pick. Eric, you know, was talking to me all week about what he should do with the first pick. You know, should he go bat? Should he go, you know, pitching? He ended up going with Gerrit Cole. And me, like a moron, went with Jacob deGrom.
Oh!
So this is a keeper league, by the way. So I had a crap ton of bats. I had Alonso. I had Vlad. I had Tatis. I just didn't have an ace. I had Dylan Cease, but I had no idea what Dylan Cease was going to be like. Like I projected him to be an ace-like pitcher, but you know, I didn't know. So I was like, I need to shore up my SPs. So I took DeGrom. Name of the game, and I knew this. I knew this going in, but I did it anyway. Innings. The one thing with Gerrit Cole is he's going to be out there for 30 freaking starts. Like, he's going to give you 200 innings. He's going to give you a pristine strikeout to walk rate. You know, the home runs, sure, right. That's a little bit of an issue with the ballpark, right? His home run to fly ball is, you know, a little high. But everything else, you're going to have a low one whip, ERA in the, you know, mid to high twos, maybe low threes. Like, dude is a safe ace. And, you know, you can't go wrong with taking Gerrit Cole as your number one SP off the board.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Carlos Rodon was your guys' big acquisition, taking him away from my Giants, bringing him into Yankee Stadium. I know there's some people who are fading him because of health. I know some people are fading him because of the park change. I don't think I'm fading him. I think he's going to be just fine in New York. What about you?
I'm with you, bro. I'm with you. This guy is a stud. The only thing that's ever held Rodon back is injuries. He's kind of like what you mentioned with Judge, right? Like, you kind of, you know, take a deep breath and hope he doesn't pull a lat or have a shoulder issue. But the Yankees have always been known to have really great lefties, you know, Andy Pettit, you know, all these, and they've been trying to find one, you know, with midseason acquisitions of like J.A. Happ. That was horrible. But Rodon is the real deal if he can stay on the field. You know, 2.88 ERA last year, really had solid season. It's just, again, can he stay on the field? Because if he's on the field and he's taking the ball for 25 to 30 starts a year, that dude's a stud, man.
Yeah, I think, like, people are like, well, he's going to be in Yankee Stadium, you know. He's going to get, you know, going to get hurt a lot more than an Oracle. He doesn't get hurt by lefties. Like, that's just something.
Yeah.
He had a 179 batting average against lefties. He gave up two total home runs all season against lefties. Like, the short porch ain't going to hurt him.
Yeah.
I'm not worried at all. For me, it's lefties, all about health.
And lefties have always been able to kind of, you know, navigate Yankee Stadium. It's really been a real big part of why Cashman wants lefties in his rotation, mm-hmm. because they help negate some of the ballpark factors. So, you know, I think his repertoire is definitely plays. I don't think he's going to be affected by it. And just his, you know, his makeup, I think he'll be fine. Definitely someone that I'm not fading at all.
Yeah. You know, like, for me, it's like, do we think he's going to be healthy? And I mean, considering he just put together a season of like 175 plus innings,
right?
I'm not super worried about it. Like, I think, you know, he showed health last year. Like, unless there's some sort of warning sign in spring, there's no way I'm taking him off my draft board.
Yeah, I mean, it may be a guy that, you know, maybe passed the injury hurdle. You know, I think he went from like 133 to 178, you know, and I think, you know, maybe, you know, he's kind of past it at this point. You know, it takes some guys some time to understand their body and what they need to do to keep themselves, you know, on the field. We may be entering that part of his career. But yeah, man, I was super excited, but, you know, my heart hurt for you because I knew that they took
away from you guys. Yeah, the Judge one didn't bother me, you know. That one hurt a little bit, that, you know.
You're
especially
sure, yeah.
After losing out on Judge and then losing out on Correa to lose out on Rodon too. It's like, I love you too, brother. All right, Luis Severino's always been like a guy that I just have loved as a starting pitcher. You know, came back last year after, you know, pretty much missing three full seasons of action. I mean, he had a total of 18 innings pitch between 2019 and 2021 through 100 innings of Luis Severino type ball. Yep. I mean, he was phenomenal. He is entering his final year under contract with the Yankees. I think they turn him loose. I mean, he clearly wanted to pitch more last year, and they were just being careful with him coming off of the Tommy John. I think this could be just a massive year for Luis Severino.
This might be the best Yankee rotation that they've had in quite some time.
Yeah, it is.
You know, one through four right now is a definite lock. They have some really interesting arms, especially if you're pegging Severino as maybe your SP3 or SP4, depending how you view Nestor Cortez, who we'll probably talk about soon. But Severino can be dominant. We've seen it. You know, that slider is unhittable. I remember what he did to Vlad in a game where he struck him out three times and made him look silly. Again, we keep talking about it, but it's all going to matter if he can stay on. If he can stay on and they turn him loose, man, if he can get to 170 innings somewhere in that ballpark, you're probably looking at 200 Ks plus. You're probably looking at a low 3 ERA. You know, the whip is going to be pristine and he's going to be exceptional there. And, you know, I always, you know, people, you know, my home league is, you know, antiquated, so we're doing wins still. But when people tell me you can't project wins, yes, you freaking can.
Yeah.
You know, tell me you can't project wins. Good pitchers on good teams with good bullpens, you can project wins. Don't give me that nonsense.
Yeah. And Rob Silver actually did a really great panel at First Pitch Arizona this year talking about you should be chasing wins. Like,
right.
Like, you know, and it is not that difficult. I mean, obviously, there are going to be the Matt Cain years, or I think, was it Cliff Lee that one right. year where he had the phenomenal year and won like nine games or something like that. Right, right, right. You know, Felix Hernandez had a couple years where it was like, you know, like, you know, he was, you know, in the Cy Young conversation, but had 12 wins. There's always going to be those fluky kind of things.
Those are outlier years for sure.
But yeah, the majority of good pitchers on good teams win games.
Right.
Bad pitchers on bad teams don't win games.
I always found whenever I come across like a fantasy article or something or some kind of publication that says don't chase wins and you can't project wins. And I had this conversation with my partner, like who I manage a team with, and he tells me the same thing. I'm like, dude, that's not true. Like, I hate it. I hate that fallacy. It's not true.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. Nestor Cortez kind of came out of nowhere the last couple of years. Has been just one of the funnest pitchers to watch in baseball.
For sure.
Is he a target for you?
Yeah, man. I love him. I think he mirrored his 2021 season last year, showed a bump in fastball, like his gains in the fastball gains were for real. I love control pitchers, guys that can throw strikes. Another lefty in that ballpark, helps. And just for the sake of what you just said, you know, he's a fun guy to watch. Like having him on your team and watching him pitch, like you want to watch him pitch because he's fun to play with. So yeah, somebody that I like. I got to see where his ADP right now is, somewhere in the, where you at, Nestor? Let's see. We got Nestor Cortez in the 110s. I mean, you can't go wrong with, you know, 10th round, somewhere in that range. I mean, you can't go wrong with a guy that you can chase wins with, that's going to give you pristine ratios, and is not going to be a completely, you know, a black hole in the K department, right? Yeah. So, like, you know, of course, at 110, definitely outside of the top 10 rounds, I'm taking them for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I like Cortez a lot. I don't think there's any reason to think there's going to be, like, some massive fall off. The only thing I am concerned with on a guy like Cortez, not Cortez specifically, is he relies so much on command and control that just a little bit of bad regression, like he loses some of that command and all of a sudden things would go horribly wrong.
Right.
But that being said, like I said, I don't think that is going to happen. Like he's just been so pristine at the major league level that, and he's so young still that like, I don't think that's going to be an issue.
Yeah. I mean, even if he slips a little bit, right. Like mm-hmm. even what are we talking about from a 0.92 whip to maybe like a 1.10? You know, like a 2.5 ERA to what maybe
for me, it's all about the home runs. Like,
right.
You know, like if he loses just a little bit of command in that inside of that zone, like we could see like the regression back to being a guy that like just, you know, gives up way too many home runs and there's no way he could sustain a good ERA. Then yeah, that being said, like, I don't see it happening.
I don't see that happening either, because you know, that would just have to be a complete 180 of the profile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't see it. But yeah, I mean, one, you know, definitely someone I'm looking at for sure.
Any interest in Domingo Germán?
I mean, yeah, looking at your rundown, you asked me if there was anybody else. I mean, Frankie Montas was, you know, they traded for him last year for a reason, right? I mean, I know he's injured and he's probably not going to start the season, right? But like, when he comes back, if he comes back, obviously, you know, I would assume that he's probably going to go into that fifth spot. And Domingo has had some experience in the bullpen. So I can see him kind of shifting into that spot starter, long reliever role where like, hey, maybe if you need a game, got to come in the fifth inning or sixth inning. I can see him transitioning into that. But start the season, possibly, you know, as a bench guy for my rotation. But yeah, I mean, it all depends on what Montas's timeline looks like, because, you know,
that Montas scares is ready. Yeah, Montas scares the crap out of me. I was already out on Montas, like, coming into this year. He was the one pair of the Yankee rotation where I was all, like, I don't love the way he looked in New York. Or really, I mean, even, you know, at points in Oakland prior to the trade.
Right.
And then now the news comes out about, like, hey, he's probably going to miss the start of the season, and there's no real timetable for him to come back. Like, Montas completely off my board this year.
I mean, it was disappointing because, you know, I thought them getting a ground ball guy, a guy that can really have just nice splits on the ground, you know, I thought with the strikeouts and the ground ball rate, I thought he would thrive. You know, coming here, but it seems like maybe the environment or just the ballpark itself just wasn't conducive. And he's always had some kind of injury bug too. Like he's had, it's not the first time that Frankie Montas has had,
so those mechanics, man.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, you know, but they're still going to play him if he's healthy, if he can come back, they're still going to put him in the rotation. So, I mean, it's going to affect Domingo's, you know, value, obviously. But you know, to start the season, you know, obviously Domingo would be somebody that I'd look for on the back end, because you know he's still a decent pitcher, and on a team that can possibly net him some wins, you know, I'd take a shot on the back end for sure.
Yeah, I think I would too, especially because I am really worried about Montas, and like, you know, this could always like continue to linger, and Germán could just like, you know, force himself to kind of stay into the rotation if he's really good. And he has shown flashes of things before. So,
he's, and, you know, 3 years removed from 18 wins.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I know, you know, 153 Ks and 143 innings, 1.15 whip. I mean, like, that's only 3 years ago. And he's had some considerable, like, you know, stuff happen outside of the off the field that's kind of maybe, you know, derailed him a little bit. But I mean, he's still a good. He still showed flashes of being a really good pitcher.
Yeah.
You know. So I mean, if you're looking for a fifth spot, I mean, Domingo makes sense.
Yeah. Let's. I mean, is Clay Holmes the closer for sure entering the season? You think?
I think he starts off that way. But this is the first time where the rotation is going to be a strength over the bullpen. The bullpen has a number of question marks because they let a lot of guys, some guys walk. But you asked me, is there anybody else? And the first name that popped into my mind was Ron Marinaccio. Ron Marinaccio, dude. For some reason, this dude's changeup is pretty filthy. You know, looking at Alex Chamberlain's leaderboard, his changeup, I think, had a 47% CSW. I have to find him again. But, dude, this guy can you know, if you're in holds league, you know, grab Ron Marinaccio. Dude throws strikes, has a great fastball changeup combo, got a ton of swing and miss on that changeup, and throws strikes, man. Like, when I saw that question, I was like, I'll have to talk about my boy Marinucci. You know, got to do it.
See, this is why I love these podcasts, where I get to sit down with people who are often, like, really plugged in on these teams. Because every once in a while, somebody drops a name, And I go, that's not a real person. And now I get to go watch some Rob Marinaccio.
Ron Marinaccio was breaking kneecaps down in a Vegas, you know, casino before he came to the Yankees. But dude,
It sounds like he is a gangster from Brooklyn.
Dude, changeup had a whiff swing strike rate of 42.4%, had a 37.3 CSW on his change. Dude is legit, man. I watched him last year and I was shocked that he wasn't included on the playoff roster. You know, Scott E. Frost is hurt. He's going to be out the whole year. Another name that folks want to, you know, think about is Tommy Canley, who they re-sign. You know, he came back off of injury last year for the Dodgers for a little bit, showed that he, you know, his skill set is still there. So if you're looking at, you know, hey, who's the handcuff? Who could possibly be a handcuff for Clay Holmes? Two names for you: Ron Marinaccio and Tommy Canley.
You don't think Loaiza is the guy?
I think all of these guys have a potential to pick up, right? Loaiza's been there the longest. He's had some closer experience. But, you know, if we're talking about guys that nobody knows about or we're not thinking of, and somebody's already scooped up Holmes and Loaiza, you know, Loaiza hasn't been the healthiest guy either. Neither has Holmes. Yeah. I mean, if Loaiza ends up, you know, replacing Holmes due to injury or whatever it is, or ineffectiveness, like what happened last year, you know, the Yankees are going to divvy up some of those saves. They're not going to, you know, completely set on one guy. And I can see those two guys vying for someone, even if we're talking about holes, right? Like those two guys could be legit guys if the pecking order changes.
I also wouldn't be surprised if the Yankees go out and make a big move to go get a closer at some point. Like, you know, and that's my big concern about drafting Clay Holmes is, and I have, I'm pretty sure I drafted him in my current league as one of my closers. I just worry so much that like, they're going to say, well, where's the one place we can upgrade? Yeah. And one of the main places they can really upgrade is in that bullpen.
Yeah, I don't know where I saw this, but, you know, I thought I saw something about them having interest in Bednar from Pittsburgh. I mean,
wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, that, you know, maybe giving up a boatload for both Reynolds and Bednar. I mean, I could see that happening
mid-season. That'd make a lot of sense.
But, you know, I maybe getting a third team involved with, you know, something like that where the Marlins package some of their guys, the Yankees package some of their guys, and they do this three team, but like, I think so. But you know, the bullpen, if you asked me about two guys, Marinaccio and Canley, Loaiza is, you know, certainly going to be in the mix because he's been in the mix in previous years. Clay Holmes just had such a weird year, man. Like, just a long, you know, run of like looking like dominance, you know, and then just completely lost it, which is just insane to me.
That's the life of a reliever, though, right? I mean, yeah, that's what we expect from relievers. So,
yeah, man.
Sammy, thank you so much for joining me. This is an absolute blast.
My boy, anytime, my man. Justin Mason, the GOAT.
Remind everybody where you can reach on social media and then plug your work again.
Yeah, @Believe_Sammy. Again, I'm a Twitter voyeur, so don't follow me. I follow you. But just know that I'm out there, guys.
You can reach me on Twitter @JustinMasonFWFB. Email me here at the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Wrapping up these 30 team previews in 30 days, just a few more to go. And I'm writing daily at Fangraphs, and I even might have something to announce here in the near future about another project, stuff I'm going to be doing. So for Sammy and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball offseason.